Welcome to VIP of the Month Spotlight for September 2020. In the spotlight this month is a sparkling lady with a sparkling personality. To bring us this fascinating story, here is our host, Teresa Rose.
Well, it was New Year's Eve, I was 14 at the time. I was celebrating 4 a.m. with them hoodlum friends of mine. I heard a boy named Elvis Presley singing, "That's all right, Mama," on the radio, and it turned me on. I've been hooked on music from that moment on. Yeah. Well, all my friends thought I had one brick less than me low. Cause I'd stop the car and I'd jump out and start dancing in the road. When I heard Jerry Lee Lewis singing, "Oh, I'm shaking, going on," it turned me on. I've been hooked on music from that moment on.
Welcome, everyone, to September the 28th, 2020, VIP of the month of September. And this month's VIP of the month of September is our own Sherry Williams from Nashville, Tennessee. And Sherry was born on May the 9th, 1952. Welcome, Sherry, and thank you so much for agreeing to be the VIP of the month of September.
Oh, thank you for having me. Doesn't that song just make you want to jump out?
It sure does, Sherry, and it made me think a lot about you when it was playing. So we're going to get started here, Sherry. Let's talk a little bit about, tell us a little bit about where you were born and raised.
Well, I was born in Newport, Tennessee, which is a little town there. Right now, probably 9,000-10,000 people that live there, probably less than that when I was born there. And there was no employment. Everybody just about who lived there was moonshiners. And so that's what my dad did. That's what my neighbors did. That's just about what everybody I knew did, except my uncle who worked in a chicken place. But almost everybody I knew was moonshiners. And so it was kind of neat because we had cars, like old, because they used them to transport the moonshine. And so we would play in those cars. And so everybody had a car that we could play in. And so when we would, you know, we'd play house and we'd go out and jump in our car and pretend. It was fun. We had car seats that we could use for beds, and because they didn't use the car seats in the back of the car. We didn't know we were poor. I didn't know I was poor till I went to TSB and realized that a lot of people had more than I did. And then I realized that we didn't have a lot, but I didn't know it growing up.
Moonshine. I'm sure we're going to hear a little bit about that, because I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about your mom and your dad.
My mom was, they're both dead. My dad, I never really knew him very well because, like I said, he was an old moonshiner and he kind of came and went, mostly went. My mother was just a hillbilly girl. She was gorgeous, beautiful girl, and which probably was not a good thing in retrospect. But anyway, she was very, very pretty. She never married. We all have different dads. I have two sisters and two brothers. My baby sister died when she was 36 of lung cancer, and my brother Michael died in 2007 of throat cancer. And so now I have a brother and a sister left. Mother worked as waitress all my life in not in Newport because there wasn't anything to do, but we moved to Knoxville when I was 10, and she went to work as a waitress, and she worked as a waitress, which was kind of good for me because that lent my being able to go out and sing where she was working, and that, you know, was a way that I could afford to do things that I wanted to do.
So tell us a little bit about your brothers and sisters, a little bit about them when you were growing up.
Well, let's see. My sister Vicky is the one that is, she's 22 months younger than me, and she is a nut. She is very, very handy, very crafty. She can do just about anything that is crafty. She tiles and she roofs and she does. And my daughter had a kitchen that she wanted done. And so Vicky came in January and did Ashley's kitchen, just the floor and the counter and the whole thing. She lives in Knoxville. My brother Tony lives in West Palm Beach, Florida. He's a district manager at Jersey Mike's. I guess Tony and I were the closest growing up. My sister Kimmy is my baby sister, and she lived with me for a long time, and she died in 1996. And my brother Michael, God love him, he was just bigger than life. He was such a redneck. He was a good-looking man, too, but he was just a consummate redneck, and he didn't care who knew it, and he was just hilarious. We loved Michael dearly.
Sounds interesting and sounds like a very close-knit family. Sherry, tell us, were you born blind, or did you go blind later in life?
I was born blind, and I'm very happy about that for a couple reasons. I am probably not very acclimative. I'd probably would have had a hard time if I hadn't been, because if I had lost my sight, it wouldn't have been much fun. As it is, I think being blind is a hoot, and I can't imagine being any other way. We have an awful lot of fun, and I don't think, had I been able to see, that I would have been exposed to nearly the amount of things that I was able to do. I was able to go to TSB, which took me out of Newport, out of that little town, out of that little moonshine area, and gave me opportunities to go to the symphony and to go to plays and to go, well, later on to college. And, you know, and I wasn't squelched at home. I didn't, you know, I did just fine. But I think that exposure would have been much, much less to life had I been sighted.
So, Sherry, tell us, what is the cause of your blindness? And is any of your brothers or sisters visually impaired as well?
They don't have any idea why I couldn't see. My mother used to tell people that she saw a UFO. She would tell them that they were driving somewhere and they saw this light. But they don't know. My optic nerve, I guess it was optic atrophy. No, none of my brothers and sisters are blind. I used to wish they were, because when I was a little girl, I would go to TSB and I'd be really homesick. And I used to wish that they were. But nope, I was the only one in the whole family, like even for generations back, I was it.
So let's talk a little bit about, so you were born blind, you have brothers and sisters. Were you treated differently from your brothers and sisters?
Nope, not at all. I really wasn't, and I don't understand. We would just get out and go. When I was four, I was running in the yard with them, and my mother told me not to do it. My mother's favorite expression was like, that's the only one you have. Like, in other words, don't you fall. If you hurt your leg, that's the only leg you've got. Well, I had another one, but you know what I'm saying. That's the only knee you've got. And so she's like, that's the only head you've got. If you're going to hurt your head, that's the only head you've got. Well, I did. Hurt my head, went into the bush or tree and had to have 10 stitches. But no, it didn't teach me much. And no, I wasn't treated much different at all.
So with your brothers and sisters, they just took you everywhere you went and you just played just like they did. No, you weren't treated any differently. That is awesome.
No, as I said, we had a whole community of people who just played all the time. And at night, it was kind of neat because we didn't have TV for a long, long time. And at night, the whole bunch of us would get out there and we'd play all kinds of games, like, you know, physical games. And at the very end of it, though, this is the only time that I ever remember being sad about being blind. They would start to play tag. And, of course, I couldn't play tag. There wasn't any way I can get out there and do that. But I would play until the bitter end, until they started playing tag. And then I would sit down and feel sorry for myself.
What about Braille? Do you read Braille? Sherry, I'm sure that you do, but I want to ask.
I do. I read Braille. I was a gift. That and typing were probably two of the greatest gifts. I mean, there are just so many that we got, but to be able to learn to type and be able to write my thoughts down in a medium that I could understand and, you know, pull it back up and read it to myself were just a wonderful thing for me.
And what about a cane user or guide dog user?
No, I use a cane because if I used a guide dog, I'd probably love it to death.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what was it like growing up. Let's hear a little bit more about growing up where there was moonshine, you played in cars. So basically up until, say, your school years, what was your younger days like?
I didn't know that I was little. You know, I didn't know that I was blind until I just never occurred to me much. I didn't think much about it when I was little bitty girl because we just never talked about it much. And so I didn't know it until we went to, they had something called a preschool conference, and I was four, and mom and I got on the bus and we drove, it seemed like for hours. And of course, little blind kids are so funny because, and I love them, that they're so curious about everything. Like, I remember this bus was double decker and I'm going, I want to go upstairs. I want to go upstairs. I want to see stairs. I was like fascinated with anything that had upstairs. And so when we went to TSB, when I was four, I realized that everybody else couldn't see too. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. We're all just blind as we can be. And there was keyboards, music, and that interested me. They had a microphone because the Dixielanders were playing. They had a microphone out in the auditorium, and the auditorium at TSB looked like a theater. Well, I was four and we'd been to movies, you know, so I thought I was at the movies because it looked just like a theater. And we went down and we were looking at the microphones, and one of the boys said, well, you're on the Grand Ole Opry. He said, boy, I thought I was. I got on there and I was talking all about them, and I was just, so I loved TSB. I loved being around other kids that we would play with everything. Chairs, we'd make chairs and line like houses. And we would have, we were very, territorial. You stay out of my house and I'll stay out of your house. And we like, we had toys at TSB that I never had at home. We had, of course, I had books to read. I had never read a talking book or a story. Mom never read to us. And I don't know why she didn't. She just never did. And so I discovered that, you know, people could read to you, which was what a gift that was. We discovered talking books and classical music, and I don't even know. It was just like a whole new, it was kind of like Heidi. You know, if you read Heidi and she goes to the city and she's such a, it's a culture shock. That's kind of what it was like for me. It was just so different than what I'd been used to being in until I was six.
So this is four for preschool. Let's talk about when you started school. Where did you start school? And talk about your early days there, Sherry.
I started in 1958, and for some reason, I was the first one there, probably because we didn't have any other way to get there, and I had to drive down with a person that my mom could get a ride with. And Susie Barnes was the second one there, and Bernice Lowry, another girl that was with us in school, so there were only three of us, and at that time, none of the toys were out. And I was sad. Well, I was good at first because I had this bed, my own bed and my dresser. And boy, I thought I was rich. I could not believe it. So at night, when it came nighttime, I was ready to go home because it didn't smell right. It didn't feel right. I wasn't used to sleeping by myself. And I was not as big a girl as I thought I was when it came down to it. And then we went to school, you know, and started learning all kinds of different, like how to read. And of course, my teacher would teach everybody kind of individually. And I think you learned a lot because she would say like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, jump the fence. That's how she would tell somebody to, you know, go to the next cell. And I remember thinking, what in the heck does that look like? So by the time we got ready to actually have our turn at learning Braille, we had already absorbed quite a little bit just by listening to the other people, you know, in our room do what she was teaching them. So it was kind of interesting the way that we were taught sort of individually. And, you know, of course, we had our together time, too. But I remember listening really carefully to her teaching other people, and they would do word cards, and I would try to visualize all that. And so by the time it came down to you, you'd kind of learned a little bit already.
And I noticed that in the last few sentences, you've used the word visualize. Being born blind, how do you visualize something you've never seen?
Well, you don't. I mean, you don't see it, but you feel it with your brain, I guess. Like when I think about my daughter, I think about how her face feels. You know, I think about when I clean my house, I think about, you know, where things are so that I don't break my head. I don't think you'd actually see it. I've taken part into a lot of studies when we were younger, and when I was in college, I did a paper that up on three-dimensional perception. Anyway, the bottom line in this paper was that the person who's been blind all their lives really doesn't have a great degree of three-dimensional imagination. I couldn't look at, say, a picture of a house and tell you it was a house because it doesn't look like a house to me. But somebody who had been blind for a short period of time, because that's what a house looks like. And I think they can fill that part in that you know, strictly is in their imagination, that's in their perceptual field. And we don't have that. But I never thought much about it until I did, you know, that paper. And then it was kind of interesting to me.
You know, Sherry, I find that very interesting, and I don't think a person that was born blind has ever explained it quite as well as you just did for a person that was fully sighted to understand. That was awesome. So let's talk a little bit about more about school. So you were at the School for the Blind. What type of activities did you do there, and what was your favorite activity that you did?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I was the first totally blind cheerleader, but that was a struggle. I did that just to piss everybody off and make them know that I could. But it was fun, but it was really a lot of work. But I enjoyed it. Let's see. I did band. I did piano, a chorus, pep band. Pep band. I love pep band. Everybody hated us when we go to the wrestling matches and the other schools, because we were loud and we were in their way, but I loved it. What else did we do? Gosh, we did a lot of talent shows, which was fun because I could meet people that didn't go to TSB, because I didn't date anybody at TSB very much. I tried it, and it was kind of like they were my brothers. I just couldn't get it into my head that this was all I had to choose from, and it wasn't because they were blind, but we lived together all the time, and there just weren't very many of them, and it just didn't work for me.
Understandable. So how far away was TSB from your home, and did you stay there? How often did you get to go home?
When we first moved, when I first went to TSB, we lived in Newport, which is about 200 miles away, and I went home at Thanksgiving and at Christmas and the regular things until the next year, and I was 7, and my baby sister was born, and so my mom was pregnant, and I didn't get to go home for Thanksgiving, and so I stayed then, and I didn't go home till Christmas. We went on the bus, and I was 7, and now that I think about it, it's like, oh my God, but I was 7 years old, and the bus went to Knoxville, and that's as far as it went, and my family didn't know that, and here I was, 7 years old, all by myself, in the bus. Well, I mean, there were other people with me, but my family wasn't there, and I had to stay there, and they had to get the sheriff to go, because we didn't have a phone, so they had to get the sheriff to go and tell my mom, and she sent somebody to come pick me up. But I had to stay there for like 3 or 4 hours at the bus station waiting.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you mentioned that Susie B was the second student there. What can you tell us about Susie that we don't know?
Oh, she loves clothes, and she plays clarinet and piano, and she makes perfect sausage balls. And she had children that we didn't see until they were 4 years old, because they were twins. And she was our president, so she couldn't play with us and them too. So we got to see them when they were bigger.
Interesting. Talk a little bit about your high school years in the School for the Blind, Sherry. What was that like?
Well, I was in the Beta Club, which was fun. We went a lot of places. I mean, really, we did. We went on band trips. We went on chorus trips. We did not. There was not a lot of interaction as far as with boys and girls. If you wanted a boyfriend, you could have one, but you couldn't really, you know, there wasn't anything much to do. We did have a social activity that we had every Saturday or Sunday, I think, where they would come to the dorm and we'd come to the dorm, and, you know, and what we usually would do would be sing, because that's just what we did. We had, I think, our education, and I have a lot of people that do not agree with this, but I think our education was fine. I wish we'd had the technology then, and I think everybody says this, but I think this has probably been our biggest gift. I know when in 2013, it was the 50th anniversary of the death of John Kennedy, and I was sitting there with my iPod in my hand downloading a book, and they said, you know, what were you doing 50 years ago? And I said, I remember very well what I was doing, and it certainly wasn't thinking that in 50 years I would be downloading a book out of thin air. And so I think, you know, not knowing, not having any clue about anything that we could have done later, the technology that we had then, like math, was a real sore point because we didn't have any real good way of transcribing it down. And so we'd go through all this big logistical stuff of working out the problem. And yeah, by the time you worked out the problem, you forgot what you were doing because you had to know where to put this and put that and put, and it was just insane. And so when I was in the eighth grade, they taught us how to use the abacus, which helped a lot. But, and they had a type slate, and if somebody ran into you, you'd splatter your math all over the sidewalk. It was just crazy. Math was probably the worst, the weakest link, I think, that we had. Although I did well in college in math, because by then, it didn't matter how you put the problem down. And once they, you know, got away from that, I knew how to work the problem. I just couldn't, took too long to get the dang thing on paper. And sometimes it took two pages. It was ridiculous. So when they stopped worrying about that, I think it got easier for me. I think college for me was easier than high school. I don't know why that was. I just, because I think we were able to kind of go on our own schedule a little bit better. We had three people to a room. We had study hall. We had practice periods, which usually for me evolved into playing something that I had written or that somebody else had written. I was a sneaky practicer. I loved it. I missed it. When I graduated, I cried for 3 months. It was awful for me to leave.
Oh, Sherry, you are just a gem of joy. That's the only way I can describe. I can hear the smile in your voice and in your soul, and you're just beautiful. Tell me, what instrument did you play? Did you write songs?
I played the French horn. I played second French horn until I was, I think, 10th or 11th grade, and then I played first French horn. I wrote my first song when I was 9 years old. And I don't know what made me decide. Well, when I was a little kid, I used to sit and make up. Mom would say, what are you doing? And I'd say, making up songs. And they weren't really songs. I was just something to entertain myself. Because for me, being bored is just not an option. I tell my kids they could cuss, they could say bad words, but do not say I'm bored. That is a cuss word. We don't say I'm bored. So when I was a little girl, we just didn't do it. I wouldn't have it. And so I would make up songs. And I wrote my first song when I was 9. And Jeannie and I would write songs together, and they were hilarious. Some of them I still remember, and they're just funny.
Let us hear one that you remember, Sherry.
Take me home, the dance is coming to an end. And then she'd say, whoa, whoa. It was great.
Absolutely awesome. All right, you were talking a little bit about in high school, if you wanted a boy, you could date. So tell us, Sherry, how old were you when you did start dating?
Oh, gosh, real dating. I was probably in college. I think, well, I mean, we went a lot of places, but, you know, as far as, first of all, I couldn't shut up long enough. If there was somebody to sing with, I didn't want to fool with just one person, or if there was a group of, you know, to go out and put a band together, I was all for that. But when it came time to, you know, but I did have a friend, God love his heart. His name was Colin, of all horrible things. And he was a drummer, and I met him when I was, a junior or senior. And so he and I would do things together. But I guess real honest to goodness, you know, in a serious relationship, I guess I was maybe 18, because one of the guys at TSB asked me once, will you go with me? And I said, well, where will we go? I mean, that's stupid. No, I don't think so.
I'm laughing over here, Sherry. You're just precious. Sherry, how old were you when you got your first kiss? And do you remember where you were and who it was?
Ooh, that's a fickle lesson. I do, and this makes me mad to even think about it to this day. I went home for Thanksgiving when I was 6, and I met this little boy, 6 years old, and he was the sweetest thing. His name was Bobby Carroll Hans, and he was my mother's friend's little boy, and he was 8. And he and I played together and had the best time, and he kissed me goodbye when I got ready to go back to school. And when I came home for Christmas, that little sucker wouldn't even speak to me. So that taught me a lesson right there of love and loss.
Oh, maybe he was too shy, Sherry. Maybe he was waiting for you to take the next step.
Who knows? Perhaps. But I kicked him to the curb.
So while you were in high school, you've talked a little bit about, you know, having a friend that played the drums and you played the French horn. Of course, we know Susie B played the piano. Did a bunch of you get together and ever go places and play music?
We had music everywhere. I mean, truly, there. And we did other things. I mean, like I say, I was a cheerleader and we had a wonderful wrestling team. And, you know, but I remember walking down the hall, the practice hall, when I was a kid. And I've talked to Ralph Brewer about this. And you could walk down the practice hall and you could tell, you know, who was in there by what they were playing. You knew who was in the practice room. You could hear, even if you didn't know, you could hear sometimes just the way they touched the piano or by their instrument that they were playing. And we all, I mean, when we didn't have anything else to do on trips, when we go on chorus trips and band trips, we would always end up singing. And we sang good, just even at our alumni, when we sing God Bless America or the Star Spangled Banner, it's like, okay, we're ready to buy a bus, guys. It's really neat to hear us all get together.
Oh, I bet. It sounds like you have some absolutely wonderful memories. So, Sherry, you graduated, and then you went on to where to college?
I went to Lambeth for a year. It's a Methodist college, and I wanted to be a teacher, a special ed teacher. And when I went to Lambeth for a year, it was the most weird thing because I had a lot of friends. I just did. I was the only blonde person on campus, and it didn't matter. It was great. I had a lot of friends. I met a guy that I liked, and he now is an oncologist in Minnesota. But anyway, it was great, but I was so homesick. Oh my God, I missed TSB, even the practice rooms. I would go to Lambeth and it's like, these are not the practice rooms I know. And it was ridiculous. I mean, they're freaking practice rooms, but I was so homesick the whole year. So I came back to Nashville to Peabody, and I went to Peabody for the next, 2.5 years. I didn't finish. I didn't graduate, didn't get a degree, but I went for the next 2.5 years to Peabody to be a special education teacher.
All right, Sherry. So now we're up to tell us what your first job was. Where'd you first go to work? And let's go ahead and kind of walk through your career path and bring us up to date where you're at today.
You know, I've always worked. My first job was when Mom was at the bar and I was like 14. And I wanted stuff, and I would go, and I would sing, and I would make, you know, $100, and it would last me a month, and I'd go sing again, and so that's what I did at for the summer to earn money. Then when I was in 16, I went to work for this company selling light bulbs, and when I was 18, when I was off on break, on college break, because we'd have a month or so at Christmas time, I would work during break for people in vending stands, or I'd work in a club. In the summer, I did a job at the Library for the Blind 1 year doing, I don't know what, I think they just mostly spoiled me there, but it was that they paid you $300 a month, and I like that. So I would help them stamp stuff and write letters, and mostly, like I say, they just spoiled me, but it was fun. And then I worked at the Ed Lindsay, doing typing for a summer. And then at night in college, I worked in clubs, and I went to work. I actually didn't plan on being in the music business. I had thought, you know, any blind person can do this. I don't want to do it. I want to do something that no blind person, I don't know why, special education was something that I thought any blind person couldn't do or hadn't done, because good Lord, we had a bunch of them. But anyway, I was silly, and I was young and, you know, so but I worked in clubs. I went to work for a piano player named Buck Fell, who was just, he played Jerry Lee Lewis kind of stuff. And he played all kinds of old rock and roll. And I thought that was kind of fun. So he would pay me and I'd make money and I'd go to school in the daytime and work at night. Then just everything kept evolving. I decided I didn't want to finish school because I was making more money than I figured I could make teaching. Oh, and I did sound-alike. I forgot that. I did sound-alike sessions. That it like this cheap, my mom called them cheap artists. But anyway, I would go into a studio and they'd give me a song to sing and I would sing it and they would pay me $50 a song. And it would be like Happiest Girl in the Whole USA or Let Me Be There or just anything. And they would put it on these records and they would sell it in these truck stops. So I would do a couple of those a month because we didn't have any money. And, you know, that's how I had to get money in college. So I did that. Then I went to work with my husband. I married Sonny Bennett in 1975. And I think he wanted me to be a star more than I wanted it. I really don't think I wanted it badly enough because the whole thing does not sound, even now, it's not something that I'd want to do. But we tried. You know, I went, I had a bar downtown at 4th and Broad called the Crosswinds Lounge. And I recorded for, 3 years, I think, for Mercury. And then they dropped my contract and told me I should look for another label. And I said, nah, I don't want to do that. And I don't know why. I just didn't feel like I had any control, I guess. Then after we stopped recording, we still kept our hand in. I started writing songs. Sonny got some things cut. I never did. Well, I did a couple things, but they never did anything. The things that I recorded for Mercury, I think one of them got up to like 57, which is as good as I ever did. So my music industry career was not very stellar. I like it. I love to sing. I love to write. Well, I say I love to write. I haven't written anything in a while, but I did love to write. I love to sing, but I don't like the business part at all. I like the business part of jail. It's funny. I can put up with that. But the music business, we would write a song and I would get so excited. And it was almost like you were on drugs and you hadn't taken anything. And the adrenaline would just be, you know, and then the down part was really down and it was just too much for me. I didn't enjoy it much at all. So then I liked the singing, but not the, you know, the business part. And in 1979, I decided, you know what? I have had enough of this. I cannot, because every winter we would be broke and we would be wondering what in the heck we were going to do because there was no business. And I said, we can't have this. I got to have something that we can do that we can depend on. So I went to vending school and had a ball. We had so much fun and I got a job and we made like $40,000 a year, which, you know, I don't know how we live, but we did. And, things have just sort of evolved from there. I've taught music in a private school, which I enjoyed. I wrote songs with the kids and we had all kinds of things that we did. I said, I've done a lot of things. I've just never really finished anything.
An awesome, fabulous life. And talk a little bit about your business right now, Sherry.
I have the commissary for the jails in Davidson County. We have 3 locations, one female and 2 male. 2 of them are maximum security, and 1 of them is a medium to maximum, although they don't really say medium. But anyway, that's what it is. I've been doing this since 1994. I started off doing it with Sonny, and he died in 2004. After that, I just kept doing it by myself. And now my daughter is working with me because we have to do their trust accounts. We have 1,500 trust accounts, and it's really cool because it's very accessible. I can return items on my own here from the house. I can check on their balances and their do a lot of that stuff. The only thing is I'm on the phone a lot, so I can't take a lot of time sometimes in the daytime to talk on the phone, but it is very rewarding. I've been able to take care of my family and her family, and we have, like I say, about 1,500 inmates at this time. We keep being quarantined and this little parts. We had one whole unit, one whole building that had 500 of the people quarantined, but that's been the most. And now they're clear. So we are trying to be very careful. It's a little bit concerning to me, but we're doing the best we can.
Well, it sounds like a very successful career, and that you can hear the pride in your voice, Cherry, when you talk about it. And actually, you can hear also no regrets about not really pursuing the music business.
No, I mean, I love to sit and listen to the stuff we did. I love to, like I say, I love to sing. No, I do not have, because I remember when Keith Whitley died. And I didn't know him, but we did know my husband worked for George Morgan. Sonny's worked for a lot of people. He worked for, God bless, tons of people. Red Foley and Jimmy Dean and George Morgan and I don't even know, just bunches and bunches of people. But anyway, he knew George, and so he kind of knew Lori. And when Keith died, I said, you know, if we'd stayed in, we could be dead. And this could have been us, because it was that crazy, at least for him. It wasn't nearly as crazy for me, but for my husband, it was not fun for him.
And speaking of your husband, tell us a little about when you got married, Cherry, and share with us anything you'd like to share with us about your marriage. I know you have a daughter and your grandchildren.
I do. I have had two men who love me beyond belief, which is pretty cool when you're as hard to live with as I am. I married my first husband in 1975, and we had a daughter, Ashley. His name was Glenn Edward Bennett. Sorry, his dad was Glenn Ellsworth Bennett. And Glenn Edward Bennett was him, and we called him Sonny. And he was a darling. I still miss him. He's just such a part of everything that I just do. And after he died, I had a hard time kind of figuring out who I was. I mean, musically, because we'd always not sung together, but he was kind of tied up in me and I was tied up in him. And it was just really weird to kind of, and after anybody goes, it's like the secrets that you knew, now only I know. And that's a weird thing to kind of, it took me a while to come to grips with that. And then I met Danny, I had known Danny before, of course, because he came to TSB and I knew him and I'd watch him play and I'd love on him and all this kind of thing. And we met, actually got together. We knew each other before, but we decided, and let me tell you, getting a blind person's, because I'd never dated a blind person, and getting a blind person to notice you is a really hard thing, because you can't say, hey, woohoo, I'm so cute, here I am. You have to sort of figure out another way to tell them, and it is not as easy as it sounds. It really isn't. So we got together in 2008, and we married in 2010. Danny is extraordinarily talented and sweet, and he's my darling. You have another chance, and that's as important as the first one. So I guess now we have new secrets, although he can't hear me well enough to tell anybody what they are.
Yes, you were truly blessed. We talked a little bit about this when we talked on the phone, Cherry, and God has truly blessed you. Talk a little bit about your granddaughter and your daughter.
I have a daughter who is wonderful. Her name is Ashley Bennett, my bug bear. I have bears. I have a bug bear, which is Ashley, a pumpkin bear, which is McKinley, and a Pookie bear, which is Glenn Ray. And I'm also Pookie Bear. Glenn Ray calls me Pookie Bear, too. So Glenn Ray is 14. McKinley is 20. And McKinley acts like she's about 6. But she's trying to grow up, and we'll be glad when she does. Glenn Ray is a diva, and funny as she can be. Glenna Ray can sing really well. She won't, but she can. I had her doing it for a while, but she's now decided she's into other things, and so I can't corral her. My daughter is she's 40, Ashley, will be 40 next this coming month on the 20th. And she, Ashley, is a nurturer. She takes care of people. She was raised to not even worry about whether or not somebody could see, because Sonny would do anything for anybody. If anybody needed a ride, Sonny would give it to him. That's just the way he was. He just never, ever worried about the fact that, you know, he could see and you couldn't or any of that. He just didn't care. And so Ashley was brought up the same way. So she takes care of everybody. I mean, not, you know, she doesn't wait on you, but if you need anything, she says she believes that, you know, where much is given, much is expected. And so she kind of adheres to that philosophy, and hopefully it'll work out well for her.
You have a lot to be proud of. Sherry, let's talk about your love of music. We understand, and we've heard you speak about that, you know, you tried professionalism, but it was not basically your cup of tea. But you still have that love of music, and you can hear it when you talk about it. What is your favorite genre of music?
I don't, you know, and you said you were going to ask me that, and I don't know. I tell everybody that my playlist has everything from Beethoven to Bill Monroe, which it does. I like songwriters. I don't even care if people can sing, but if you have, and I guess I'm the same way about any sort of writer, words to me are what's important. Now, Danny doesn't write, but now Danny plays to the point where you don't even care about the words. You know, but I don't do that. I don't play very well at all. And so I try to do words, and words are what I like. I like Chopin. I like, that's my favorite classical composer. My favorite songwriter. I don't know. But Harlan Howard, I guess, for the classic country, is probably one of my favorites. Modern songwriters, there's a guy named Daryl Scott that I really like. He kind of, I guess, Linda Ronstadt, that kind of, Trisha Yearwood, not all the stuff she does, but she has some really nice things that they choose for her to do. And so I don't know that I have a real genre that I like the best. I like anything that is pure, even if it's bad. If it's pure, I kind of like it.
What about a favorite artist, male or female? Doesn't matter if it's country, classical, whatever. Who is one of Sherry's favorite?
I like Trisha Yearwood awfully well. I like Aretha Franklin, Patsy Cline, Hoyt Axton. Just a lot of different, some of the old Waylon Jennings things really make me happy. Glenn Campbell, I loved him when I was growing up because he just can sing anything he wants. So I have just so many.
Who have you met that is famous? Sherry, with your husband's connections, I'm sure that you've probably met a lot of famous people. So who is the most famous person that you have met in the music business?
Gosh, I don't know. Most of the people that I met have been session musicians, because that's, but I knew Ronnie Millsap when we were younger. He wasn't famous then. We had a friend who was a mutual friend, and he was a DJ here. And so he told me that I should go see Ronnie. Ronnie was working at the King of the Road, and I went down. And I sent Ronnie a note because I had a slate and stylus, a little plastic slate and stylus. And so I sent him a note, and he came out and sat with me. And then his wife was Joyce, and they brought me home from the gig, and they would do that every now and again. She was a very nice lady, too. And they've lost their little boy, and it's awful. But I haven't seen Ron since, you know, when I did my first record, I took it to him. And I haven't seen him since then, so it's been a long, long time. But he was awfully nice. He and Joyce both. A lot of famous, like, Buddy Emmons and Jimmy Day, who are steel guitar players. Who else? I don't even know. Would come into the bar. Most of the people that I know are Jerry Lee. Jerry Lee was on Mercury with me. He and I had a good time together one night, I think. Not like that. We were just, like, partying. Gosh, all the people that were on, what, Skeeter Davis was on, Reba was on when I was, so I met her. It's been so long. Tom T. and Johnny Rodriguez were on with me. We all did a show together. I've worked on Hank Thompson, Hank Williams Jr. I don't even know. They're just, and of course Sonny, yeah, he knew a lot of famous people that would come, see him. Carl Smith, who was an old, came to his funeral. Most of them are dead now.
So what was the song that you, on the label that you took to Ronnie?
It was called Triangle. I've got it. I should have sent it to you. It was called Triangle. And, I took it, it was my first thing with Mercury, and I was so proud of myself. And he had a friend who was working, he had just formed Ronnie Millsap Enterprises, and Diane McCall was, and she is a, he was his secretary, and she was friends with us. And so when she told me where she worked, I said, well, I'll bring him a record. And so I did. And that was the last time that and he said, well, I've got a few too. And he did. By then he was really famous.
What about the chorus, Sherry? Could you sing us the chorus?
Let me see. Triangle, triangle, round and round. Triangle, triangle, up and down. Two ladies' hearts break apart. One man is to blame. Triangle, triangle, a dangerous game. It's a murder song.
Absolutely beautiful. I'd love to hear the whole thing, Sherry. You'll have to share it with me. Sherry, we talked a little bit about this. If you could meet anyone, male or female, living or deceased, who would it be and why?
Oh, my grandma. I'd like to meet my grandmother. She could sing, I think. And my grandmother, that's who it would be.
So we know you live in Nashville, Tennessee, which is the country music city of the world. What is it like living in Nashville?
I live near the stadium, about a mile and a half from the stadium. I love it, but, I've been here most of my life, and I can't imagine living anywhere else. Thank goodness we don't have hurricanes. We do have tornadoes, but they didn't bother me, thank God. My friends are, most of them are here. We have the horrible radio, horrible, horrible radio in Nashville. Always have had. Awful. That's not one of our strong suits. But I can't imagine living anywhere else.
And just curious, do you know anybody personally, or ever did you stand on the Grand Ole Opry stage?
I don't know how old I was, but anyway, it was at the Ryman, and they were auditioning for Opryland. No, I have not ever sung. Sonny has worked on the Grand Ole Opry, but I never have. But I have stood on the stage and sung, which was for this audition. They were doing for Opryland, and they were doing them at the Ryman, so I went down and stood on the stage and sang, and they said that they would take me for the job. Except that you had to be able to dance, which left me out totally.
So Sherry can't dance? I find that hard to believe.
No. Oh, no. Just ask Clifford. He wanted to throw me in the river.
What is Sherry's favorite kind of food?
Oh, that's hard. Gosh, because I need to go eat. Let's see. I like pizza. I like anything that anybody else cooks. Mexican food. I love Mexican food.
Next question. Do you like to cook?
I do not. I used to cook a lot when my daughter was little because, she had to eat. And I would bake things and bring them to school and, but no, I did not like it. I think I did it just to make everybody know that I could. It was one of those things that, ha, I can do this if you can. But no, I do not. My friend Jeannie loves it and she can have it and she feeds us. That's fine with me.
I hear you. Always tastes better when somebody else cooks it anyway. What about travel? Are you a traveler?
We were. We had a motorhome. We went all over the place. We've been on 3 cruises. And the first cruise was about 10 months after Sonny died. And Jeannie and I went together by ourselves. And we had a ball. We made friends with everybody on that boat. They called us. Well, we told them we were the Butt Sisters because that's what we call ourselves. Always have. And we had so much fun. I would like to do another cruise. I hope that someday, things will calm down a little bit so we can do that. But I we traveled a lot, and I don't, just packing a suitcase now, I have to start 3 days ahead of time to get it all done.
And that leads me up to my next question. If money was no object and you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Oh, probably back to the 70s so that I could tell myself stuff, you know, and I would, if I could go anywhere in the world and, you know, that's where I would go, I'd go back and talk to young Sherry and tell her how it was.
Sherry, who in your life has been the biggest role model and made the biggest impression on you and why?
That's an interesting question. Gosh, and I've had so many. I mean, there have been so many people that have given me gifts, you know, just of themselves that I can't even begin to, I guess anybody who has nothing, you know, like somebody who we consider to be inferior, like intelligent, intellectually or physically, like, and then they wind up, I know a friend of mine comes to mind, his name is Jody Chamberlain, and he's not really a role model, but we all thought, you know, when he was in school that he was in a coma. I mean, we just, you know, he just never got excited about anything, and we thought he'll never do anything. He'll never ever amount to anything in this world. And he was able to, you know, raise his children and provide a good living and send them to college. And so I guess anybody who is somebody that we don't expect very much of and who defies everything that we believe that they can do is a good role model for me. And I've had a lot of those, just done little bitty things. But I mean, it's still, that's how I like to measure people's worth.
The underdog and the one that beats all odds. I'm right there with you, Sherry. You mentioned you'd like to go back to the 70s. My next question, is there anything in your life you wish you could do over? And if so, why?
Oh, probably, yeah. I would like to have straightened some things out with my mom. I would like to have not had, my mom had to go to a nursing home and she had dementia. And I would like to have, you know, gotten all her memories from her. And I would like to have told her all the things that I, you know, needed to. And I think we probably did that sort of. But you always, you know, wonder, is there something that I left out? Or is there something? Because I can't ask her now. And that's a hard thing. Yeah, just spending time and getting everything that I could out of everybody that I can't now is hard. Because you can't ask them anymore, and that's a hard thing.
Exactly. It's why they say live today as if it is your last, and I know exactly where you're going with that with your mom, Sherry. What is on Sherry's bucket list? Do you have a bucket list?
Oh, I'd like to go on another cruise. I'd like to be able to get my front bed cleared off so that I can have company again. I'd like to get my daughter's house totally cleaned up and get her animals out of the house so that, just little things, nothing huge, but there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to get my knees done. I have awful knees. And so someday, like just before the COVID thing happened, I discovered like shots and for your knees. And now I haven't had one since January. So I'd like to get my knees done if I ever get the courage. That's on my, isn't that fun?
And just a couple of more questions, and then we're going to open it up to the membership so you can take a deep breath. Sherry, of course, we're all living in uncharted times with the COVID virus. All of our lives have been affected dramatically since the beginning of March. How has COVID affected your life?
Well, I can't soft on my there's a word in our family which is weird, but when we rub somebody's face or rub their hand, my daughter used to call it soften, and I'm sorry I didn't explain that, but I haven't been able to soft my granddaughter's face in a while, and I miss that. I can't, she's 14, and she's just come and plop on my lap, and I could rock her, and she still does it, but I have to wear a mask, and of course, we have to be careful at work. Maybe it's made me shop a lot more. I really need to kind of stop that. It's like I can't stop buying things. I don't know what the deal is. It's every god, and I really need to stop that. So that's what it's done for me. It's made me freaking nuts about buying stuff. I just buy everything.
You did tell me you like to shop, and I think you expressed that at the Out of Sight auction, and we're very glad that you did, Sherry. Thank you very much for that.
Oh, I love auctions. I love them. We have a great time at alumni at the auction. We always have an alumni convention, and we have an auction, and that's one of our favorite things.
Well, my last question, and then we're going to open it up to the members, is how long have you been part of VIP Conduit, and how has it changed your life?
Oh, since forever. I think when it started, and then I quit for a while. And it's weird how it checked, because when Sonny was sick, I would get on there and I can sleep. And I don't know if this is VIP, because it may not have been at that point, but I think so. And I would stay up and people would just talk to me all night. It just made me feel good to know that somebody, that we don't stay awake like that now. I guess we're all too old. But then we would stay up all night and visit and play music. And, you know, I'd drink schnapps and sit and visit and talk. And I just couldn't sleep. So it gave me company when Sonny was sick. And that was good.
Excellent answer, Sherry. And you are a true delight. And I have thoroughly enjoyed this interview and getting to know you. Are just a pure joy. At this time, I'm going to open up the floor to the members to ask Sherry any questions. If you'll key up one at a time and let Sherry answer the question before the next person keys up. All right, members, here's your chance. Who wants to ask Sherry the first question?
I just want to comment, say great interview, what I got to hear of it, and thank you for doing it.
Hey, Sherry, and Chris Rose, and everybody. This is Tomcat, and I didn't hear the very first part of the interview, but I've been here for most of it. I'm going to go back, and when it's put it up, I'm going to go in and listen to the first part, and the rest of it, too. But it always was a delight whenever Sherry would come into a room, either on here or back on the old For the People days. You always had such a bubbly presence, and you know, just so cheery. The question I have for you right now, though, what instrument did Sonny play? I know he was a musician, but what was his instrument?
Hey, Tommy, how are you? He played bass, and he had a Fender, Tommy, with the serial number of 007. So it was like the seventh one, I guess, which we sold for a lot of money to George Cruen. But he played bass.
Sherry, this isn't a question, but I thought it'd be interesting for you to hear the parallel of, I also played French horn in high school, and I also began writing songs when I was very young, so I thought it was neat to hear that.
I wish I could play piano as well as you do, Marley.
Hi, Sherry. I'm Debbie, and I have a feeling we've met before. You mentioned that you've been on cruises. Did you ever go on a cruise with the NFB of Arizona to Grand Cayman, Jamaica, and Cozumel, like in 2013, January of 2013? There were two ladies that were blind there that were sort of in our group, and I think one was named Jeannie, and I think that was you guys.
I don't know. We've never been to Cozumel, no. I went in 2005, and I think 2011... And then my daughter and I went, and Jeannie and my daughter and I went to the Grand Turks in 2015. But nope, that wasn't me, Debbie.
Okay, sorry about that. All right, thanks. Great interview.
Sure, I just want to let you know that I think you're totally awesome. I love your singing. I love to talk to you about shopping and books. And thank you so much for being my friend.
Oh, thank you, Connie. Thank you for coming. I do love books. I forgot to tell everybody that. Yes, books are my vice, real, real big time.
Hey, anybody else have a question for Sherry? Who's your favorite author, Sherry?
Well, Sherry, you've done us proud. From the little girl that got her pillow wet to the little girl that came down to pat me down every morning to see what I was wearing. Great interview.
Sherry, I'm sorry to cut in there, but it's a particularly good story. The first night when you met Susie B at the TSB, I really like that story, and I don't know if you've shared it with people or not yet tonight.
Oh, she would play the piano, and I'd never heard anybody that could actually play with two hands. And I got under the piano, and they had this anyway, she played, and I sat under the piano so I could, like, hear what was going on from underneath. I loved it. And she was on this little round stool that you could push, like, make it higher and lower, and you spun it. Anyway, they put me to bed. I know that's what you're after, Rod. They put me to bed, and I was home. I was fine, and then I woke up, and I was in a strange place. And so, Susie, I don't know why they didn't just let me sleep in the room with them to start with. I really don't. But anyway, I came down and found my house mother, and they carried me back to bed, and I didn't like it. And so when Susie came and found me, I told her, she asked me, was I crying? And I told her no, but my pillow was wet. So she came and put me in bed with in their room. I don't know why they didn't just put me there in the first place.
What a sweet story. Anybody else have a question for Sherry?
Yeah, Sherry, I want you to know that I enjoy being in a room with you and just listening to your lively talk. It's such a pleasure. Are you aware that you're on YouTube?
No, Chuck, I'm not aware of that. Are you sure?
Well, I didn't have much time to look as I wanted to listen to you. I saw some stuff over there about Sherry Williams in the 70s in Triangle.
There you go, Sherry, you're on YouTube. Anyone else have a question for Sherry?
Enjoyed your interview, Sherry.
I did too, Miss Cheryl. It was wonderful.
It was fabulous. Come see us sometime.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too, Sherry. And like everybody says, it's just so much fun to be around you and be in the room with you because you have this contagious good feeling, and it's just. Can't be down when you're around Sherry.
Oh, well, you could if you live with me, Becky. I promise you. Thank you. That is sweet. Hey, Miss P and Linda.
Anybody else have a question for Sherry? Well, hearing nothing, Sherry, again, I want to thank you so much for being the VIP of the month of September. This has been such a delight, and I have enjoyed it thoroughly and enjoyed speaking with you as well. Next month, folks, put on your calendar for October 26th, PM Eastern. The VIP of the month of October will be John the Guitar Man, John Luland. So please mark that down on your calendar. And up next, I'm going to let Sherry introduce her favorite song and tell you why it's her favorite song. And that's the way we're going to end this interview tonight. Everybody for coming and supporting this event, and God bless everybody.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I hope I haven't interrupted everybody's day for too long. This song is called Long, Long Time, and gosh, it's been my favorite song. I don't even know how long. I like to play it, and I'm not going to do that tonight, but I like to, because I do it a lot slower, and I make everybody cry when I sing it, and so I love it. I love the words. It's just a pretty song. It's a Linda Ronstadt song, and I hope y'all like it, too.
And I think I'm gonna love you for a long, long time. Caught in my fears, linking back the tears. and I think I'm gonna miss you for a long, long time. 'Cause I've done everything I know to try and make you mine. I think
this has been a presentation of VIP Congress.